This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, you have joined us on Embracing Change. We're so glad that you have joined us. We are in season 9 of the podcast, and it's entitled Leaving Prison to Build a Pulpit, the 30-Year Journey. And this is a season where Lakrita is taking us through her book of memories. That's the only thing I can think to call that big notebook. We talked about it, and I think the last podcast, it's got all of her clippings and letters and documents. It's a wonderful thing. So this episode is called Creating a Plan. So Lakrita, last week we talked about your letter to Judge, or I'm sorry, last episode, we talked about your letter to yourself, mm-hmm. about Judge Black and how that all kind of came about. As you were preparing for today's episode and you were thinking about creating a plan, what was the underlying thing that really kind of drove this to make this a subject today?
Well, I believe because as I went into the halfway house that we talked about in the beginning of this journey, I had 93 days. You get 93 days and then 5 days to find the next placement. So it's a total of 97 days. So I knew I had to come up with a plan. And so part of that plan was the therapy I was in, learning how to deal with myself. And by this time, I was out of the halfway house and I was in Anna Louise Inn. And that is another place that at that time was downtown. And you can rent like small rooms. And I rented that room and left the halfway house and worked at Frisher's. Everybody knows that if you read my book. And I knew that I had to have a plan, and the plan was to be honest and to be truthful.
Yeah.
And so when I say, you know, having a plan, I believe that the first way that you have a plan is when you create it to be totally honest, you know, and not only honest with other people, but honest to yourself, truthful to yourself.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we talked about dealing with that little girl and having the cheer in the room and, you know, being honest with her and being honest with me and not trying to hurt her, kill her, or leave her behind, but take her with me. I had to create a plan on how I was going to live with the memories and the experiences and the trauma and yet try to become someone, not even become someone different as much as to think different, be different, and go in a different direction.
Yeah.
So I had to create a plan, and I shared this before I left the halfway house. There was a counselor named Bonita Spraggins. I've spoke about her before. She was in a group, one of the groups that we had there at the halfway house, and she saw something in me. And what she saw something different. I did not know God in the way that I do 30 years now, you know, later. But she said that she felt like I had great potential. And what I've learned is everyone has potential because God made it that way.
Amen.
See, he made us in his image and after his likeness. So he had a plan for us.
Yeah.
And then we made our own plans. And now in this moment, I had to create a new plan.
Yeah.
Or I had to create a plan that's going to get me back to the place where God purposed me to be. And so one of the ways that I feel like that plan came into existence was the fact that she invited me on November the 28th, 1992, to Christ Emmanuel Christian Fellowship. And under the leadership of Michael E. Dantley and Carol Dantley at the time, he wasn't Bishop Dantley as he is today. And I never will forget, like, first when she invited me, and I think I may have said this before, so you may have heard it, so if I'm repeating myself, oh, forgive me. Tack it to my head, not my heart. But anyway, I remember it was a line getting into the church, and I had never seen a line outside of people trying to get into a church building. I had never experienced that.
Didn't you liken it into...
It's like in a concert, yeah. Or... Yeah. You know what I mean? It's you know, I liken into that. I've seen that kind of stuff, lines into restaurants possibly, but never a church. And so I was just so inquisitive, like, oh, my God, what are they doing in here? And remembering part of my plan, this was creating a plan, and I didn't even know it was creating the plan. But I know now when I look back, hindsight is 2020. But when I got there, I realized these people seemed to have, just like I talked about the butterfly that flew past me and I said, I want to be as free as that butterfly. That group of people seemed to have freedom or have something that I wanted. And so I remember thinking, I want to be part of this group. Whatever this group is, I want it. And what do I have to do to get it? Mm. And I remember they had a altar call or, you know, and I went up. And when I went up, Pastor Benny, who you are familiar with, that we work with now, laid hands on me. And when he laid hands on me to pray for me, I fell forward. And I remember him telling me that the plans that God had for me was not backwards. They were forward. And they were waiting on me to show up. I'll never forget that. And I didn't understand it, but I do today. And so creating a plan was to create that plan for me to move forward. And so I remember getting into all kind of catechism classes, all kind of Bible studies. I got into Run with the Vision. That meant to learn what that church's vision was about. That was that I planned that. I remember learning, you know, getting into the class of Living God's Way, you know, and got into that catechism class. And after that, you know, so I just began to create my plan. And then part of my also plan was to get involved with NA and AA. Even though alcohol and drugs were not my necessarily kryptonite, as people call it, but it was a place where it was a community. I had to create a plan to create me to find new people. Because if you always do what you always done, you're going to always get what you always got. You always think the way you always thought, you will always become what you're thinking. And so I felt like I needed to learn how to create a new plan of new planning on people, places, so I could change my patterns. And so going to the catechism classes, like what I said, Run with the Vision, Living God's Way, God and His Covenant, Roots of Character, the discipline by living a disciplined life, and just learning all these things were information. You talk about it today, you know, learning this new information and trying to take from what the therapist has said and then taking that information and putting it into a plan so I can begin to keep myself busy, because idle time to me was the devil's workshop. And where's the devil's workshop for me? I can't say where it's for you, but for me, it was in my thinking. And if my thinking is stinking and my thinking is not constructive to the well-being of my change, I am going to end up where I don't want to be.
Yeah.
So I had to create this new plan for my life and begin to see myself different and begin to do things that I was not accustomed to doing, being willing to take the risk of learning new people, even though people was the very thing that hurt me. I had to learn a new community. I had to create a new plan, create new people in my life, listen to what they were saying, see the identity. You know, we always want to see what's different, but it's almost like let's embrace the similarities and not always see the differences.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn how to see the similarities in their story. If theirs was drugs and alcohol and mine was prison and pain, how was my pain in prison the same as their drug and alcohol?
Yeah.
And be willing to come into those programs. And so our church had an ADAM program for alcohol, drugs, abuse ministry. They had an ADAM program. And so then we had a SARA program, Spiritual Application for Recovering Addicts. And so I went to that. And, you know, so it was like I was constantly just getting into stuff after I was introduced to this church. The church at that point to me in 1992, between 1992 and 1997, to me really was focusing on people that was broken in a way, and they were having programs within the church that really connected, that I connected with. So I was able to create that plan. And so I just continued to do those things throughout my journey after getting out of the halfway house, after being in therapy. I still was in therapy. I was still going. I wasn't going as often, but I was still dealing with my stuff. And I was, she was teaching me to teach, you know, you need a plan. You need to make sure that, you know, this work is not done in vain, that you didn't do all of this. And, she, you know, and then NANA talked about relapse. Well, I refer relapse to my life, not with doing drugs and alcohol, but going back to prison. So I had already relapsed over and over and over and over. And if I didn't want to get a relapse, I had to do something different. So I created a new plan.
Sounds to me it was a lot like equipping yourself. Like,
exactly.
So when you were going through all these classes, it sounds like it was addressing just all these different aspects of your life to be able to then plan and hope for the future, right?
Exactly.
To see it differently.
Yeah. You know, hopefully my husband will come on here, and we will be married by the grace of God 30 years in October, and I'm hoping to have him do some of these podcasts.
Yeah.
But, you know, in 1993, you know, I met my husband. You know, we were on, matter of fact, I was still in the halfway house, honestly, when I met him. I was on catching a bus, and we were on the bus, and I was getting off, and he, so funny, he asked me, was I somebody's sister? And I looked at him like he was two-thirds crazy. Like, no, I'm not. And
was that a pickup line?
You know, that's why, I don't know what it was, but it was a crazy line to me. And I'm in a new city, and he asked me, am I so-and-so's sister? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And then next thing I know, this was probably, like I said, I got out of the halfway house the January of 93. And I think I ran into him on Woodburn Avenue probably right before I left the halfway house in January. And then about April of that, no, it, matter of fact, it was April. April of that same year, my friend came to pick me up from where I was living at Anna Louise Inn, and he was with him. And when I saw him, I was like, he's like, oh, how are you? Didn't I meet you on the bus one day? And we got, and I said, why are you with him? Who are you? And then that's when my friend, he was a guy, he said, this is my friend Charles, and we grew up together, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, why is he here? And he's like, no, he's just here with me. We're going to go to a meeting after we drop you off. Because, you know, they was going to a meeting. They both was in, you know, in the community I was in. And so when I got back from the appointment I had, they picked me up, and I'll never forget my husband was like, when he was still there, and he's like, I bought you something. And I was like, yeah, what is it? And he was a banana. He's like, I don't know if he was hungry and wanted some breakfast. It's kind of early, so I thought I would bring you a banana. I was like, I don't even eat bananas. And then he was like, well, what do you eat? Because I can go and cook you breakfast. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, y'all want to go to my house and cook? I'll cook y'all some breakfast. So we went over his house, me and my friend, his name is Bruce. Me, Bruce, and him went over his house. He cooked us breakfast, and then we went to another meeting. And then right after the meeting, Bruce was dropping me off, and he's like, hey, you want to go see a movie? And I said, well, do you have a car? What, I mean, who are you, and where did you come from? And he was like, yeah, I got a car. And I'm like, okay. So I felt like even in that, you know, me creating the plan got me connected to my husband.
Yeah.
You know, and so,
I could see that.
You know what I mean? And so, like, in that moment, what began to happen for me was that he was like, well, do you want to go? And I was like, I guess. What are we going to go see? And we went to see The Bodyguard. Went to see The Bodyguard.
Good movie.
And then we went out and got a Subway sandwich, and then we talked. And that was on April the 5th of 1993. And I am telling you, from that day to this day, 6 months later, we ended up getting married. But let me go back some, because I also had to deal with some sexual identity stuff that I was dealing with. Mm. And I think the reason I was so hard on him was because I was still not sure who I was sexually and my identity, because I had struggled with liking women. And liking women, not just liking them, but believing that I was meant, that I was going to be in relationships with women. And so in that process, what I learned in my healing through my therapy was also a lot of that was coming not from my sexual identity. It was coming from choices that was made for me, but it was also coming from a place of I wanted to be nurtured and loved by a woman. because of the abandonment and the rejection. And so I was leaning in, and plus people can say some of the sexual abuse that I encountered with Mr. Sam. Some of that was tied into that, but more of mine came from my need to be validated by another woman. Because even my foster mother, who loved me, I never really felt like she validated me and she nurtured me.
Yeah.
So I was looking to be nurtured and validated. And so it was easier for me to lean in towards women, because you got to remember, most of my childhood was spent in institutions, and then most of my adulthood was spent in prison. And I'm just telling you, just in case y'all didn't know this, they don't have co-eds where I was.
Right.
Women was in prison right. with me. So it wasn't a co-ed prison. It was a woman's prison. So it was easier for me to lean in to where I was and who I was around. And we created, you know, I call them fake relationships. You know what I'm saying? Pseudo-effect relationship, because you create the community you need and you create the thing you're desiring. And so for about 8 years, I felt like, and I even took a relationship outside of prison, and me and this person lived together for about 2 years. So I really thought that that was the kind of relationship I wanted. So when it came down to me meeting my husband, at that time, I was still in therapy trying to find out who I was.
Yeah.
So to pick up a relationship, but one thing I do know is that I had decided through the relationship I had been building with God and my relationship to equipping and understanding His word and wanting to be more of, I was a Christian. I confessed. I got baptized. I was a Christian. So I wanted to live the Christian life. So I had decided that I wanted to be married, but if, you know, whatever that looked like, I'm not really sure. But I knew that I was not going to live the lifestyle I had been living, and yet I was still trying to figure out the identity. So I was still finding and creating, what is the plan for my life now that I know this information? I know that that's not really who I am. That's not what I was made to be. Who am I in that area when it comes to the opposite sex? Who am I? So I think that was pretty much why it was so difficult. And I was kind of like sarcastic with my husband, because I wasn't really sure. But, you know, in that moment when he was introduced into my life, in that moment with my friend, I wasn't sure who I was, if that makes sense.
It totally does. And trying to figure out how you were going to connect with him as a man and woman. Like,
exactly.
Trying to figure that whole
exactly.
thing out. I could see where that would
you
be
know,
tough.
Like, yeah, like, look, I want to be your friend, but I ain't really wanting you like that.
So what, like, I know this episode isn't about you and your husband, but, like, when you were moving to that point where 6 months later you got married, like, where was the turn? Like, was it like him winning you over?
I think so. I think so that, you know, he was, I'm going to tell you something, as, you know, men pursue, right? And then they conquer. And so my husband was definitely a strong pursuer. I'm going to be honest with you as well, is that in the community that I was adjoined to, a lot of men like me. I'm likable. Matter of fact, I'm lovable.
You are.
And I'm cute. And I'm cuter. I'm cute now and I was cute then. And I'm smart. And so I was,
a lot of
people was really, you know, men was attracted to me. I had a lot of male friends. That's why even the person who picked me up was a male friend. And I don't believe he liked me in that way. He and I was truly just friends. And if he did like me, he was going about it in a way that did not ever put that out there. You know what I mean? But I was, and I think that once Charles got a chance to really hang up, when he saw the connection to Bruce, and that's my, that he saw, oh, she's friends with him, then, you know what I mean, what's going to happen is that I can connect with her through him. And so, and he did. And so after that, he pursued, you know what I'm saying, pursued. And I mean strong. I looked up. Bruce came to pick me up to take me to my sister's house for Easter Sunday, because my sister lived in Hamilton. Who you think was with him?
Charles
was with him. I'm like, dang, he everywhere. And the next thing I know is that Bruce came to pick me back up from Hamilton. Who do you think was with him?
Charles
was with him again. And I'm like, dang, he's stalking me. And so it just became, you know, and then I'll never forget one time when he, you know, like Charles is a laid back kind of guy. And I remember like when we were in this, it was on a Tuesday night. I'll never forget it. And they were all getting ready to go to a movie. This was before I even knew who he really was. And I knew another guy that knew Charles. And I said, what you guys getting ready to do? And they was like, oh, we going to the movies. And I said, on a Tuesday night? Don't y'all have to go tomorrow? You don't go to stuff like that on Tuesdays. You do that on the weekend when you're off. And they was like, looking at me like, what? Like, no, we go to the movies when we get ready. But my point is that from that, it was like Charles was pursuing a part of me and I was being attracted to a part of him that I was very focused. See, again, getting back to my plan, I'm very focused. Charles is very laid back, very, you know, comedic, you know what I'm saying? Very, that's who he is. And I think there was a part of me that was attracted to that in him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then also trying to find out who I was. So I remember I wasn't going to have sex with nobody. Like, no, sex is out. You know, again, we're not doing the sex thing.
Right.
And I remember saying the next person I have sex with is going to be my husband. And so as Charles pursued me, and if he wanted to have sex with me, then he was going to have to marry me. And that was kind of, honestly, I laid my plan down to Charles pretty straight up. This is the deal here, sir. I'm not looking for a boyfriend. I'm looking for a husband. According to the Bible, a man should not lay with anyone but his wife.
Amen.
And so I'm just saying, I was really, my plan was really biblically focused. And so I just believe, I don't think he knew, like, I was so involved in my plan of being trying to become who I needed to be and doing things different. One day I was at a church, and every Wednesday I went to church on Wednesday. If they had conferences, I went Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And one day he just asked me where I was going. I told him where I was going. When I came out, who do you think was sitting on the step across the street? Charles. And I'm like, why are you sitting here?
It was a man obsessed.
And I was like, why are you out here? And he's like, well, I just wanted to know where you was going. You said you was going to his church, and I just wanted to see. I said, you didn't trust me. Not that I was, it don't matter if I'm, you know, I told you that's what I was doing. But he's like, that's when he knew that day. He said, you know, he knew, like, at that point, he was smitten by me.
Yeah.
Like, and then one day I came over
It took that to reveal it after he'd been coming around all that time.
Well, this probably was only by July, but you know what I mean? So it was a couple of months.
Yeah.
But then one day I needed to borrow his car. And so I remember calling him and saying, can I borrow your car? And he's like, well, yeah. I said, you know, and he had this car, and I had watched him, I observed him. It's so funny. I observed him. You had to raise up a hood. And then you have to go in the carburetor and you have to open it up and then start it. It was something you had to do, like hit it a couple times and then go in there and start it so it can get some air or something. Hmm. And I would watch him do that every time we would be in the car and go somewhere. And so I wanted to borrow his car. And I said, well, he's like, well, yeah, you can borrow it. And so when I got over to his house, he was like, okay, let me go down there and start it for you. And I was like, I can start it for myself. And he's like, no, it's a trick to it. I said, trust me. I can start this car. And he's like, okay, here are the keys is. And he said he was looking out the window, thinking to himself, I know I'm gonna have to go down there and help her. And he said, when he saw me get that car started, he said to God, this is my wife. He said, and this is what I can't wait to hear his side of the story if he comes.
Because, he said he was gonna, so.
You know, this part of the story is when he said he looked down and saw me start that car, he realized that's a woman who knows what she wants. Come on.
Yeah.
And she knows how to go after it. And that's the kind of wife I want. And so that's what I'm saying, creating a plan.
Yeah.
I knew what I wanted. I knew how to get it. And I was willing to do whatever I needed to, even getting my hands dirty by opening up his trunk, putting my hands in the carburetor stuff, and it was oily, wiping it off with a napkin and getting in that car and starting it.
I love how, like you were equipping yourself, you were pursuing your plan, even though it wasn't like a, when you say plan, meaning here's how I'm going to live my life, right? Mm-hmm. Not realizing what all God was going to have before you that was going to utilize all of these things you were equipping yourself with. But that you were so focused.
I was.
This is it. If you're gonna date me, like this is what I'm looking for. I don't have time to waste. I've got to focus on who God made me to be. I'm learning all this stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it was just a very focused. I'm uncompromising is probably the right word I'm looking for.
I was serious. I was not willing to negotiate it. I felt like I had negotiated most of my life away.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to compromise. I had already used my compromise time up.
Yeah.
That's the way I looked at it. It's like, no, I already did all that. You know what I mean? I'm not doing that no more.
Well, it was sanity. Like, right? Definition of insanity is
doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Over and over again. Right. And so you were doing a very sane thing. No, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to try God. I'm going to trust him, and I'm going to do this thing. And while you didn't have a solidified plan, like in years and years into the future, your plan began with God.
Exactly. My plan began when she took me to that church and I realized what these people had, I wanted. Didn't know what it was they had, but now I know it was a relationship with Christ, but yep. I wanted it. And so whatever I had to do and whatever sacrifice time I had to make, I made my working schedule around making sure that I can go to the catechism classes, the Bible studies, the support groups.
Yeah.
Honey, it was all about what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And Charles was all just getting, stuff. He was just like a little fly on the wall, getting in the way. And if you ain't going to be a part of the bigger plan, get your butt out of the way, boy. I ain't got time for it.
But he was part of the bigger plan.
He was part of the bigger plan. And that was, like I said, and then in August of that same year, he asked me to marry him.
Oh, that's so
And then
cool.
In October of that same year, we got married.
Oh,
and
so cool.
And even with that, I was working at a nursing home as an NA, a nursing assistant, a certified nursing assistant. And it was a girl there, and she and I became friends, co-workers, and not friends, what I know friends to be now. But we were co-workers, and we were friendly with each other. And I remember telling her I was going to get married. And she had just bought maybe a $3,000 dress and had it for, not just bought it, but she had got married 2 years later, and it was sitting in her closet. And you know what she did? She gifted me with that dress.
No way.
Yes, she did, and said, whatever you need to do to alter it, to get it to your size. I'm telling you, that was another sign for me that make me know that I was going in that part. He was part of the plan. When I told her that I had gotten engaged, I still got my original engagement ring, and he went to the pawn shop and bought my engagement, our wedding bands.
Aww.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a lot of money, but he asked me to marry him. I told her, I showed him my little diamond ring. It was, you know what I'm saying? And I took it to her and I told her, I said, I'm getting married. And she looked at me about 2 weeks later. She came back. She said, you know what? I got something for you. And I said, well, she said, I have a wedding dress that I wore about 3 years ago. She said, and I paid about $3,000 for it. And it's just sitting in my closet. And I want to give it to you. I want to bless you. Mm-hmm. I want it back, but I want to bless you with it. She said, and you can alter it however you want to your size, because I probably was, you know, she was a pretty healthy girl, and I was, you know, but she let me. And then my friend Bruce's mom was a seamstress, so she's the one who took the dress up and made it my size. And then my best friend at the time, Leslie, I only had her as a matron of honor. And we found her dress for $20 somewhere, and she altered that, and my sister and them cooked the food, and so they did for the reception of the wedding. Pastor Harris counseled us, and even though we was going to Christ Emmanuel, but Pastor Harris was like a spiritual father to us both. He counseled us, and he married us. And I mean, but everything came together. The plan came together. I had a sponsor. I had a male sponsor. Most people say, I had a male sponsor.
Hmm.
His name was Sonny, and the reason I had him is because I was healing my relationships to men. See, because again, remember, I was dealing with my sexual identity.
Yeah.
I didn't want a woman because I didn't want to tempt myself. I didn't want to take the risk that I would have some kind of emotional connection to a woman. So I found a man to sponsor me. And that male sponsor, he had a wife. And so I didn't have to worry about that. He had a wife, and him and his wife was very much around, and so they was able to model with me before I even met Charles. So, and then what he came alongside, and he paid for Charles's tuxedo, and he, you know, everything we needed was provided for us for that wedding. Our wedding probably cost us a few hundred dollars, but we had the traditional, beautiful wedding. I'm telling you, it was beautiful.
And when I think of that wedding, I love all the details now, because I think about it in a bigger way, but for me thinking about that wedding for you. It was such a turning point in so many ways for you. You were marrying a man, like we're stepping into a godly relationship, and then your son showed
exactly.
up. So like everything in that moment was just like this huge turn.
Right, and we all know I hadn't seen my son in about 5 years, did not invite him, had prayed that April, prayed for his father's heart to change against me. The same time I had met Charles, before I met Charles, started praying for his father's heart, met Charles, all of this. And then I look up and my son comes to my wedding and I didn't even know he was coming. And he's been in my life ever since, and he'll be 40 this year.
What a day.
I know.
What a day.
I know. It was amazing.
Everything about that is just, that's
creating a plan.
It's
creating a plan.
Well, and then God helped with that plan. And
the plan was already there.
Right. There's a scripture that talks about how he will restore back to us those years that the locusts
and the caterpillar and the moth stole.
Eaten,
but he
right.
And I always say, and the ones you gave to him too.
Right, right, right. He is such a God of restoration. And even he was leading you into a restoration that you weren't planning, like, okay, if I do this, then this will happen. Like you had no idea. You were just being faithful to follow God the best way you knew in that moment. You pursued your relationship with him, and then it was like this door started really opening for you, and like God started revealing his goodness through a man named Charles who was sitting on the steps when you came out of church.
Exactly. Or who was in my friend's car giving me a banana.
Right, give you...
like that I don't even eat. I don't even eat bananas.
But it was a thought that counted,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, and it was in your son showing up at your wedding, and it was, you know, in your first job with, you know, admitting that you were a thief and they gave you a shot. It was, you know, like there's just so many of these things that
let you see it bigger now than you did before.
Yeah. It's like, man, was God just leading you and showing you blessings.
Yes.
You know, like it just talking about how there's a song that says, you know, even in our worst day and our things that we have happening to us, it feels like a blessing because God's word says, I work out all things together for your good. So it's like, where's the blessing going to come out of this? And yet God was doing that for you step by step by step. And now you look back at it, it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful and mind-blowing. I can't get the image of Charles sitting on those stairs waiting for you to come out of that church out of my head.
I know. It was amazing. I was like, why are you over here?
And I love your husband so much. He is just such a good guy. Folks, I wish everyone out there could know him. He has such a dry wit, and he's so funny, and he just pops them off. He's one of these that'll lob a funny comment, and then he'll turn around and walk away, and you're left with this funny comment like, wait a minute, what'd he just say?
Yeah, and he's because he's not a big talker, he's the kind of person when he does talk, I really listen.
Yeah.
Because he's not one that just talks all the time. And he's very, very protective of me, but he's also protective of the people he hang out with and what he does. I'm telling you, the odds were against us, you guys, to make it because both of us come from such a past, which is not my business to tell his story.
Right.
But you know, it's just amazing that we're getting ready as of April the 5th. We will celebrate, 30 years of being together.
That's so cool.
We start officially dating, we say April the 10th. So 5 days later after we met, then, you know, he said that's when he started dating me, whether I was dating him or not.
You're like, take that banana and go.
Pretty much. But he cooked us breakfast that day, and he was a pretty good cook, and he still is. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, so folks, I hope you take away from this just how God can work through what to you may seem like just trying to take yourself down a different path, and how God will take that plan and he can weave it into just such a beautiful thing. And it's so cool to get at the end of all those years and look back on that as you were doing all the things to like learn and take a different path. It's so cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm smiling, folks, from ear to ear, so it's good. Anyway. All right, till next episode. We'll see you guys.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lakrita Bowman.